Hello and welcome to Coin Talk, the show of Bitcoin optimism recently. I'm Aaron Lammer, here with Jake Hang, the original location, the setting where all the magic has happened, the Crypto Cave. We're brought to you in partnership with Medium. They make all this great stuff possible. If you enjoy Medium, become a member. It's $5 a month, helps support writers, support things like this show. Play that sweet music.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Monday, June 3rd at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $8,530.
Hello, Jay.
Hello.
Now, this taping was nearly aborted as a result of a large earth-shattering oil drilling kind of machine that has appeared outside of the crypto cave.
It might. You showed it to me, which I was a bit surprised about, because you're like, you got to see this
thing. It looks kind of cool, though, right?
It does look kind of cool. It definitely looks like they're drilling for oil. Do you remember those books? Did you ever read those books, like Wayside School is Falling Down?
No.
Oh, it was about, I think it was, I might be wrong, and listeners, if I am wrong, then please correct me.
Please
but
correct.
It was about like a school that was built next to an oil well, I think, and it was built like vertically instead of horizontally, and so it was like many stories high, but only had one classroom per floor. But it did remind me of that, where like you have an oil well in a very dense urban space here in Williamsburg. It's probably not an oil well, first of all.
I think
but
it's
it
actually
really
smashing up a parking lot.
Oh, really? Yeah. Is that what it is? They need something that big to smash up a parking lot?
For people listening at home, this is a crypto podcast that has no actual financial advice. To me, that thing kind of looks like if modern day There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
Like if they did a remake of There Will Be Blood, but it was present day, it would have that machine in it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I realized?
Yep.
That I was not thinking of Wayside School. I was thinking about an episode of The Simpsons where Mr. Burns does a slantwise drilling machine and starts drilling underneath the school because there's oil under the school. Do you remember this?
I do remember.
Okay.
That
yeah. That's so. What I was thinking about. So maybe there's oil under the crypto cage and somebody is trying to steal your sweet, sweet oil.
Yeah. Don't come here looking for that sweet oil and don't come in here trying to steal my Nano because I never actually loaded my Bitcoin onto it and now okay. I've lost it. Jay, it's the, I would say maybe 10 day anniversary of you becoming a Rippler. How's it feeling?
It is feeling all right. I mean, Ripple has done pretty well. I don't really care that much about it. I think that what your real implications are is, have I bought into the mania? Am I now like harassing people online? And
you definitely are harassing people online, but is it about Ripple?
No, I am definitely. Yeah. So I haven't transitioned into a pure believer yet, but yeah. The person who I talked about last episode, for those who didn't listen, it was one of my friends who the only thing I will say about him is that he's very lucky. And he suddenly got into crypto and was very bullish on XRP. And just because I was like, well, this guy's bets always go well, so I might as well just buy some XRP, I also bought some XRP. The thing I will report about my friend is that he has fully gone into the cult of XRP. And something that he literally texted me yesterday was, you know, the thing that's awesome about this is the community. And I was like, oh my God.
I have a great idea. I mean, we've been talking about these t-shirts for a while, but maybe we can make the like prototype and send it to him, which is just a t-shirt that says passionate about international banking transfers.
Yeah.
Or maybe with a question mark at the end.
well, this guy in his business, with his legitimate business, he is a businessman. He actually does do a lot of international transfers.
Oh, really?
And he did say, you know, I really do hate Swift. You know, it does
yeah.
suck.
No, I mean, you know, I think sometimes we talk about Bitcoin's appeal in the developing world, somewhere like Venezuela, as if the world is a bunch of isolated islands. But actually, the first world is touching the second world, is touching the third world. And people who work in industries that involve things like Swift are like, no, it doesn't matter if you're like an American. It's still a real pain in the ass to do international bank transfers.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? For people who do move a lot of money, that type of thing is actually a concern to them that they can put their heads around, more so than something as abstract as, you know, the gold standard destabilized the entire, all of Europe and led to forever wars, and we need to get off of, we need to go back to the gold standard and get off your currency, or whatever the argument is on either side.
Yeah.
Like, just being like, hey, SWIFT sucks, and maybe this is better than SWIFT. Like, that's a tangible thing. Like, in our theory of who Satoshi is, that's what started Bitcoin, right? Like, hey, this PayPal thing that I'm using to buy my model trains is terrible, and I'd like to have a non-PayPal option. I do think that that is actually a pragmatic reason why he's into it.
Well, I mean, there's a question about incremental change in technology, and this is not to ethically or morally condone any path, but I think we can say that technology is pretty amoral at this point. Something like Uber comes along, and it supplants taxis basically because it, like, skirts regulation. It skirts regulation a bit, but it isn't so far outside of regulation that it gets instantly shut down.
Sure.
And eventually becomes too big to fail and takes over the market. I would assume that if you looked at the bull case for Ripple, and I know that you've been looking at the bull case for Ripple, $220, was that the target we were discussing?
Yeah, that is not me. That is what the XRP community apparently is saying these days.
Well, so the bull case for Ripple is basically that, like, it's a easier, less regulated SWIFT transfer, and eventually it supplants all SWIFT transfers on Earth, the way that Uber's valuation literally only makes sense if it's like every car doing business in America is owned by Uber.
Yeah.
Or that along the way, they also facilitate some new line of business that justifies the massive price. Now, does it give you any pause that, like, some of this is already priced in with Ripple? And actually, even at, like, whatever it is now, 40 cents, all, it's pretty high. Look,
I am not the one who's, like, this is some trickery you're doing here where you're saying, you think it's going to go to $230. No, I do not think it's going to go to $230. I would be stunned if it went from its current position of about 46 cents to a dollar.
Yeah.
But at $230.
Pleasantly stunned.
Yeah, $230, the total value of Ripple would be about half the GDP of the United States.
Yeah.
So no, I don't think that that will happen. But your Uber example is interesting because it does show that in terms of pricing these types of things, it doesn't necessarily have to be that every car in America is affiliated with Uber, because obviously it's not, you know, that there will be a type of mania and speculation that might lead to a result that assumes that type of future. I have a very hard time believing that that would happen with Ripple or XRP, but, you know, the only thing that I will say is that according to my mole within the XRP society, that is what they're thinking. You know, they're like, well, why is it impossible for it to be worth this much? And then you just say, well, based on the laws of physics, math, and, like, every rule of economics, like, this is impossible. But, you know, like, they don't listen to that type of stuff.
I'm really looking forward to our XRP tip jar coming alive after this episode.
Yeah.
We got some good Ripple tips last time.
I did see someone tweeting for the podcast, like, an excerpt of our transcripts being, like, one of America's most vocal XRP critics is now on board, and I was like, oh no.
I mean, I like to think that if this $220 Ripple thing does happen, and, like, it's basically like the Ripple industrial complex, that me and you are championed as early, like, friends of Ripple.
Yeah, look, hail ants, right? We need to welcome our new Ripple overlords.
Yeah, I will say that the Bitcoin maximalist case looks more ridiculous if you make the maximalist case for anything else. I don't know why I'm so, like, forgiving on the idea that Bitcoin is going to become, like, the standard currency in society. When you just, like, substitute XRP for BTC, I feel absolutely ridiculous even saying it.
Yeah. XRP's community has always been a mystery to us, right?
Well, that's because some of them are not alive.
Yeah, the Bitcoin community has been less of a mystery to us, right? But in terms of, let's just think of it, this is the most bullish thing for XRP I will ever say, and I expect the XRP community to at least send me a hat, given that they sent you a fucking hat.
No, that was Niraj sent me that
hat. Oh, Niraj sent you a hat. Okay, Niraj, send me that hat.
The XRP community sent that to Niraj, and he sent it to me.
Is it more, and I think this is partially what you were saying, is it more unlikely for the entire fiat currency system of the world to be overtaken by a Bitcoin standard? Or is it more reasonable to say that every international transfer in the world will now be done in XRP instead of instead of like SWIFT or whatever like financial swapping system there is.
I know it would be better if I disagreed with you, but I think the XRP thing is more believable simply because there's actually an existing protocol that it's replacing. The US dollar is not exactly a protocol. SWIFT is like a way that banks transfer money. I don't really understand it. I don't understand how everyone just decided on SWIFT, but it reminds me a little bit of like the way that I talk to these keyboards here is MIDI. And MIDI is the standard from the 1980s that is like very weird, opaque. It's powerful, but kind of difficult to use.
Sure.
But it's just like built into everything. And so even when you buy a brand new keyboard now, it doesn't like, often they'll have a USB, but it almost always has a MIDI port because MIDI is the standard. It makes sense for the SWIFT standard to be disrupted. Does it equally make sense for the US dollar to be disrupted?
No.
I don't think so either. Although I do think the Venezuelan Bolivar is probably ripe for disruption. Well, so yeah, maybe we're basically, when we look at Bitcoin, maybe we should be thinking of it more like some of these currencies are above water and some of these currencies are below water. And if you have a below water currency, you're kind of vulnerable to Bitcoin predation.
Okay, Aaron, what will you do if XRP goes to $220 and you have zero of it?
I will really feel like it's kind of a greater cosmic joke, honestly, on me than if Bitcoin went to zero, where if I just like broke even and you bought like a mansion on Ripple money, that's the worst case scenario for me. In the same way that the worst case scenario for Kevin Durant is the Warriors winning the championship.
Without him,
if
yeah.
you were to win without me and through Ripple, can think of no worse outcome for me in this long, long standing bet game we're in.
I'm glad you're thinking of my family's goodwill or good fortunes.
Well, look, if you really just believe that the shit rises and that, if nothing else, we can say that Ripple are skilled marketers. I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And if you just, you know, we brought up this idea last week of maybe we should just gamble on marketers because it seems like marketing is moving the crypto market as much as anything else. Below that tier, but maybe above that tier in marketing skill is Justin Sun of Tron, who won an eBay auction this week to have lunch with Warren Buffett.
Okay,
this is not a fever dream, Jay. This really happened.
So I want to report something interesting to you, which is that my friend who is super into XRP right now, he also bought, I think I told you last week, into BTT, which is a derivative of Tron.
It's Tron's BitTorrent token.
Yep. But it is also controlled by Justin Sun.
Yes.
He was livid about this. He was like, you were right. This guy, you know, he's like manipulating the Tron numbers in the market, and then he's going to spend it all on a lunch with Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why he was mad about it, because I was just like, well, whatever. He's rich. He's going to spend his money. He's trying to get Warren Buffett on the Tron bandwagon. If Warren Buffett came out tomorrow and was like, every coin is stupid except for Tron and BTT, do you know what would happen to the price of those things? Like, it would go crazy.
Justin Sun is the crypto equivalent of running on the field nude during a Champions League game with your website written on your ass.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, that did happen.
Like,
yeah.
This is a person... I feel like these are his greatest works, not his like worst works. Like,
I know, I respect it.
And clearly, I mean, we criticized many founders early in CoinTalk for refusing to reinvest in their business and basically cashing out as soon as possible. But it seems like Justin Sun is willing to burn increasingly large piles of money on larger and larger stunts, like paying $4.5 million to have lunch with Warren Buffett. Now, what would you predict the conversation at this lunch is going to be like?
I think Warren Buffett will, because this was his idea, you know, and because he has to play along, will be very, he'll be, pretend to be open-minded to what Justin Sun has to say.
Well, Buffett does this every year for charity, and it was only a matter of time before a crypto guy was going to fucking buy it.
Yeah.
Like, really, it's kind of surprising that Brock Pierce didn't do this in, like, 2014.
I've stunned that the people who put the, you know, the yacht party and Chelsea Pierce with the two Aston Martins, like, I'm surprised they didn't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's amazingly good PR for your company because guess what? Everybody writes about it, you know? And everybody now knows who you are. They're like, oh, some crypto guy spend $4.5 million to have lunch with Warren Buffett. Isn't that stupid? But 5% of those people are like, who is this crypto guy and what is this Tron?
Well, I think it has enduring value also, because one thing I noticed about Buffett is he hasn't actually changed his mind about crypto, but he will say things now like, Bitcoin's rat poison, but the blockchain is promising. Look at the JP Morgan coin, right? Which I don't think even really exists anymore. Like, I don't even know if we're pretending that happens.
Does the IBM blockchain exist?
Who knows if any of this happened? But the thing about Buffett is he only knows like 4 or 5 facts about crypto that he's going to bring up every time someone asks him about crypto, which is every time he's interviewed, particularly like in a collegiate setting. So once Justin Sun is the only crypto entrepreneur Buffett knows, there's a good chance he's going to get mentioned, either made fun of, like described as emblematic of crypto culture. Those are all wins for Justin
But
Sun.
I think he won't be made fun of, though, because I think that when you've paid $4.5 million for Warren Buffett's time, and that money goes to a charity that Warren Buffett wants that money to go to, Warren Buffett can't really turn around and slander you, you know?
Well, and what would the slander be from Warren Buffett? He doesn't believe in
Tron
Bitcoin.
Tron is bullshit?
Yeah, if he said Tron is bullshit, that would be like the greatest day in Tron history. It's like Buffett picks a fight with Tron.
That is true. So the worst case scenario is not, I agree with you, the worst case scenario is not a bad scenario.
Yeah.
The worst case scenario is if he never mentions it again. But, you know, the next time, right after these guys go to lunch, wherever they go to lunch, like I'm picturing like with they go somewhere in Omaha and have like a steak.
You know? It is at a steakhouse. I think it's in New York, but it is a steakhouse.
Okay. I was picturing like the place where they send out the Omaha steaks. You know, they send those things out by like frozen mail or something. Well, anyway, so they go there, right?
Yeah.
Warren Buffett for the next week, right? What are the questions going to be anytime he's in front of a reporter? What'd you talk about with that guy about Tron? What'd you think of him?
100%. Well, how long do you think he has to sit at the lunch? Like, okay, over under.
Hour and a half?
That's a long, that's like
he paid $4.5 million.
That's a 2-martini lunch. I remember reading a story about Seinfeld doing one of these and spending like 17 minutes at
that
the
lunch. You can't do it.
Hour and a half.
Yeah, because guess what's
going
to happen?
I was going to say 30 minutes.
If you do 30 minutes, what happens the next year?
It's just some dumb businessman buys it to
all
get
the rich.
The look.
All the rich guys like get together and like, oh, he was only there for 16 minutes, and then your price goes down. Just spend an hour and a half.
It's true that it gets you and 7 friends lunch. It's a party of 8 who get to have lunch with Buffett. Now, I wouldn't put it past Justin Sun to like auction off each of those seats to other crypto entrepreneurs.
I don't think you can do that.
Who do you think Justin Sun brings for his 7 Tron employees?
Models.
Yeah.
I think that Justin Sun, if I was Justin Sun, and I was running Tron, I would not bring anyone else. I would just have it be me and Warren Buffett, and the other 7 slots would be out.
I kind of agree. All those people are just eating into your like one-on-one Buffett.
Yeah, what are they gonna say? Like, hey, here's my chief of operations, Bill. Yeah, you know, and Bill's like, hey, Warren, hey, big fan.
Been with Tron since the beginning.
Yeah.
So excited to be here.
Yeah, you don't need a hype man if you're Justin Sun. You are the hype man, you know? Like he's like every part of like a rap group at once. That's why he's good at what he does. I don't know, Aaron. Do you think that the Warren Buffett news has been priced into the price of Tron yet, or do you think that we should buy it right now?
It's definitely on the dumb opportunities list. Although, if I'm betting on your friend, I find it fascinating that you keep saying that your friend is incredibly lucky, because generally you evince a hard markets, like, there is no luck, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he's a one exception.
He's a one exception. Yeah. Do you believe in luck?
I don't necessarily believe in luck, but I will say that, and this is true of every gambler, I think, right?
Yeah.
No matter how analytical and methodical, that at some point you just see somebody and they're just throwing money around and it always works out for them, and that's who this guy is. And so, you know, you just kind of think, well, that guy's just lucky.
I think part of my Bitcoin maximalism comes from the fact that I don't really believe in luck. So when other people are like, oh, this guy bought Bitcoin in 2013, talk about getting lucky. I'm like, that's not getting lucky. It's like quite literally the opposite of getting lucky.
Sure, sure. So if you're asking, does this guy have a high risk tolerance, you know, and a high risk profile that can pay off huge?
Yeah.
Yes, that's how he rolls. And that does lead to good situations. Now, I also have a high risk tolerance and a high. Yeah, and I win much less than he does.
Among the gambling pros, and I think that this speaks to our current Bitcoin altcoin divide, do most gambling pros, and this I guess would be across types of gambling, make most of their money on long shot bets that pay out and then you like grind and you miss, and they had a huge one? Or are they people who like look for a small edge, bet the money line, like, you know, are making a lot of 57, you know, basically bets that pay out 2-to-1, say, versus 100-to-1?
Well, they're grinders, right? Yeah. But even people who are now famous, everybody who is a big time famous gambler went for it once.
Right.
You know, and that's how you build up your bankroll, multiplying it up and up. Like, if all you do is grind a reasonable amount of money, you can grind out a living, but it's a horrible living, you know? And so that, to me, is not the same as, like, these guys who try and 1,000x and then change their lives, quote unquote, you know, like life-changing money. You have to go for it at some point.
Right.
And so, yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess, like, that's the one question I wanted to ask you. And it's something that you asked last time, and so, and I've thought about it myself. Should we just be getting more into shit coins right now? Like, you know, like, there does seem to be some hype and hysteria around this stuff. Like, the fact that a lot of people are not asking us about Bitcoin but are asking us about specific altcoins, like, that's all recent, you know. And that last time this happened to us, like, we were, you know, trying to transition into being like OG real guys, and we're just holding Bitcoin while everything else went crazy, and then we missed out on it.
No, but we weren't. I mean, that's the thing. Like, we already fell for that. We've already been here before at this exact same moment.
I know, but I want to fall for it again.
We were like, shouldn't we just, like, if we think the whole market's going up and altcoins go up more violently than Bitcoin, why would we not just, like, buy lots of altcoins? And we did that. We bought lots of altcoins. We bought altcoins willy-nilly during a period where altcoins were going up. It's not like we weren't buying altcoins when the, like, altcoin mania was
happening.
That's
true, that's true.
We still somehow kept losing Bitcoin value because we're not good at trading.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the thing I think you don't realize, and I'll just bring up my own personal experience. I haven't done a segment about this because it's a little too emotional, but I think this is the time, just to say that my sumo coin bag has officially been deleted from my Blockfolio.
Why?
Because Cryptopia is, like, in bankruptcy proceedings anymore, and it's gone. Like, the money's gone.
You can't get it out?
No, Cryptopia is done.
No,
it's
but
closed.
So what?
If you go there, there's just a thing that's like Cryptopia doesn't exist anymore.
Where's your sumo coin?
It's in the ether. It's in the bankruptcy proceedings of, like, the creditor, New Zealand creditor protection for Cryptopia.
So you can't. You can't email them and be like, can I have those sumo coins?
This is like emailing the Quadriga guy, except they're still alive.
Oh, my God. So what did you do? You hard exited on your Blockfolio? You just deleted it?
Well, I left it there for a long time. I mean, it wasn't worth much per coin. It was at rock bottom, but it was still at like 4 cents a coin from a high of over $10. and I just, it was comforting to me. And it was worth actually about $400. But I was like, basically, the Cryptopia creditor thing has said no one's going to get any money. And if anyone gets any money, I think it's going to be people who had, like, a little bit of Bitcoin left on there, not people who had, like, absolute shit coins.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting to see if I ever get that back. But I've written it off for now. And the way that this relates is I think SumoCoin is my most shitcoin experience possible. It's the one time I really caught a true pump and bought it, like, under a dollar.
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah.
I didn't know how to jump. I was not skilled enough to jump off the horse at the right time. And so I rode it all the way down. Like, I, like, hold the shit coin for starters. But I also didn't really know how to read the overall altcoin mania well enough to know, like, when the good times were over there. So I predicted if me and you bought a bunch of shit coins right now.
I mean, I have bought a bunch of shit coins, yes.
I predict you're going to have, like, a good few months. I think you'll probably do decently overall in terms of fiat if the market goes up, but I predict you'll lose money to Bitcoin just because that's happened to us every time. It's like we're going into the playoffs and betting against the Patriots over and over again.
Yeah, you're right.
The Patriots are Bitcoin.
You're right.
And we're like, no, they're due.
The old cliche of insanity is doing the same thing every time and expecting different results. It does apply to us here.
Yeah, and I also haven't heard about any new altcoins to get excited about. Someone's got to give me a new narrative.
BTT so
I
can be coin,
like,
baby.
I can be like, oh, this is nothing like last time.
Yeah, me too, actually. All right, so did you want to, you wanted to talk about Noicoiners.
Yeah, this is another thing. This is like a different thing. So we're putting a change in our life and sticking away from these altcoins. Actually, we're not really going to do that. But
I have a lot of altcoins.
I feel like last time we were on the way up, I was like very critical of Bitcoin. And it kind of ruffled my feathers when people within Bitcoin would be like, the mainstream media doesn't understand Bitcoin. And now there's this sort of secondary media, or maybe it just exists on Twitter, which is the Noicoiner media, which I would say Bitfinex is maybe at the like head of.
Yeah,
right?
But that existed before, right?
Well, they existed before, yeah. And I was really into them before.
Yeah.
And now I'm kind of like, man, you guys are kind of some blowhards, and your FUD case for Bitcoin doesn't make any more sense than the crazy maximalist case.
So you're talking about people like Isabella Kaminska at FT or...
No, I'm actually talking about more like the coming from around that Bitfinex, like the whole market is manipulated.
Okay,
Tether
sure,
printing
sure.
is out of control.
Yep.
It's not the overall critique of Bitcoin. I think the overall critiques of Bitcoin are actually really valid. It's the people who are like, this is all a mirage. Everything you're seeing is fake. So like when something like the last Tether scandal hit, you have people being like, oh, everyone's trying to get their money off of Bitstamp, and like there's all this stuff like happening. It's about to crash. Basically, that the market was like, sorry, not Bitstamp. It was the Binance hack, that people were trying to get their money off these exchanges and they couldn't, and it was creating this huge price premium, and that was causing the whole rise above 8,000. And now we've had a little time. Everything's back to normal. It's like, oh, actually, no, Bitcoin's just trading above $8,000. It feels to me in the same way that Bitcoin maximalists read everything as a bull sign. There's this Noicoiner take, which is that everything's fake. Nothing could convince me. And I'll just like call the market going down a bunch of times. And then when it goes up, I ignore it. I don't know. I feel like it just like misses something fundamental about there being that like some real principle that is driving Bitcoin upwards that is not simply a single mirage.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think that every message has a exhaustion point.
Yes.
And I think that when Bitcoin was going up, that these types of voices were necessary in opposition, and they felt kind of cool, or at least somewhat appealing, because you're like, well, this doesn't make sense to me either, so let me seek out some things that make sense.
Yep.
And whether or not they're right or wrong, I don't know, but there needs to be a counter narrative to this.
Yep.
Now, the problem that we have is that we went through a year of just death, right, in crypto, and these guys never really changed their tune at all. They just said the same thing. And they're like, oh yeah, you think 3,000 is bad? What would you think about 800?
Right.
And you're like, dude, like, sure. Like, I don't know what the difference between $3,000 and $800 is in terms of what the actual fundamental sound structure of crypto is. And you don't either. So the price doesn't matter.
Give me a framework, Noicoiners, in which your hypothesis will be validated. You keep saying Bitcoin's going to $0, and it did go to like towards 3,000. And it was like,
SumoCoin went to zero, basically.
No, it's still being traded on some other exchange.
I know, but from $10 to 10 cents, it's like, that's like a 99% drop.
All you SumoCoin doubters out there about to get wrecked. No, I'm talking about like Bitcoin,
sure.
Right? Like, okay, yes, lots of altcoins are frauds, but Bitcoin itself, you keep saying it's going to zero. It's beginning to sound like the person who keeps predicting the end of the world. And then when it doesn't come, it's like this whole different set of things. To me, my understanding of Bitcoin is sort of a mix of Noicoiner skepticism and Bitcoin maximalism. And because it's a mix of those, I never thought it was going to go to zero, because for the zero case to be true, that maximalist case has to be completely worthless. It reminds me a little bit of like an Orthodox religion that lapses and becomes a little sinful. And they start letting in the singing and the dancing. And then some people are like, screw you guys. Like, we're going to go over and, like, do it the old way, more pure and a little bit, like, more rational. And they're still overdoing that. It made sense, as you said, when it was a reaction, like, during the time of mania and excess. But now that we're in this weird, ambiguous situation, I wish there was a more nuanced skeptic take. Maybe that's really what I'm ultimately asking for, is I'm interested in a more skilled criticism of Bitcoin. Well,
those, I think those do exist. I think what's happening, but I agree that they're not forefront. The forefront. The thing that I think is happening here is that basically what has happened in the last 3 years is that the entirety of Bitcoin discussion has become prognosticating, right?
Yes.
So you have people who are predicting the future of the world's economy. That's one level, right? But that is like a constant.
Yeah.
And that message doesn't change. And then you have people, and this is the majority of the discussion about Bitcoin, who are trying to predict the price, and 99% of those people have no idea what they're talking about.
Like the two hosts of the show.
Exactly, right? Just listen to our backlog. You don't even have to go to the basement tapes.
We have never predicted the price or asked other people to predict price on the show. Has never happened.
Exactly. And when you have like a prognosticating economy and a prognosticating information economy, that when things don't really match up with the things that you are predicting, which inevitably happens to everybody because nobody knows why Bitcoin's going up. Nobody really knows why it stayed flat at 3,000. We kind of know why it crashed, you know, but we don't really know why it crashed. Basically, that's a lot of time for everyone to be wrong a lot. You know?
It's a big vacuum.
And I think that at the point where everybody has taken like 15 losses, 15 L's, and like maybe gotten four things right, and they have a bit of a following and people know about them, and you know, like people like Bitfinex are almost famous, you know, like you just stop trusting people because people are wrong too many times, you know. And it's not like a sports thing where the just majority of sports discussion is, you know, a lot of that is prognostication as well, but a lot of it is entertainment as well, and a lot of it is like analysis, and a lot of it is just talking about storylines. But in sports, if you're wrong every single time, it doesn't really matter, you know? But in crypto, when you don't have all the other things around it, when there's not a game that people want to watch, all it is being right or wrong. When people are always wrong and the market doesn't behave, then any type of thing causing gloom and doom or calling for something cataclysmic like Bitcoin zero, it just starts to sound more and more like bullshit.
Yeah, I think in gambling terms, we're basically talking about being on tilt.
Yeah.
Right? We're like,
crypto's been on tilt for a few years.
Well, and no coiners are on tilt also, where it's like, I'm calling for it to go to zero. I'm like, I can see a situation where I'd call Bitcoin to go on zero, like if there was some huge technical bug that like brought the network down for a week. But that hasn't happened. So maybe like keep that in your pocket and don't go full tilt just yet. It's a little like if I was like, hey, Jay, who do you think is going to win the NBA Finals?
I think the Toronto Raptors will win.
Who do you think is going to win the 2030 NBA Finals?
The Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, it's like, it would be ridiculous for you to call a decade ahead. And that's basically what we're doing with Bitcoin.
Yeah, and that actually, remember, did happen. Like, remember those, I can't ever stop thinking about this one story that happened during our days in the basement tape. So this would be a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin was around, like, let's say it was like around $5,000, I think.
Yeah.
And there was this, like, really big report in a very reputable financial newsletter that said an analyst from a very reputable analyst firm or like slash bank was saying, like, by our projections, Bitcoin will be 8,450 by next March. And you're just like, dude, like what the, like what analysis went in, what possibly could have gone to predict like 6-8 months in the future what the price of Bitcoin is going to be? It makes absolutely no sense. Like, there's nothing in this market that could lead to any sort of prediction that accurate. And, like, that's basically what a lot of people are doing for a long time.
Yeah, it's sort of like, why did Pitchfork include the, like, decimal point in their ratings? Like, what is the difference between a 9.3 and an 8.9?
Yeah.
Okay. We got to get out of here, so we're going to call this, like, a slightly short one this week. We're going to do a mailbag, I think, next week. So send us some questions for that mailbag. hi@cointalk.show. We've been getting some great ones. Send us your lightning tips. That's tippin.me@cointalkshow. Well, Jay, could you ask for some Ripple tips from your people?
Yeah, I want some Ripple tips. Or although I think if I actually want the Ripple tips, I need to say XRP tips.
Now, are you asking for personal XRP tips or are you asking them for Coin Talk?
I will ask for Coin Talk. I'll split the XRP tips with you as long as you will have them.
Would it be like out of line for me to like trade that, like to like swap that XRP for Bitcoin as
yeah,
it comes in?
Yeah, you can't do that. Don't do that.
I'm stuck in a Ripple tip is forever Ripple.
Yeah, yeah. Until atomic swaps.
Until the whole Earth flippening of the Swift system.
Yeah, until 240 Ripple.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Monday, June 3rd at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $8,530.
Our show was edited by James Nicholson. We're brought to you in partnership with Medium. All of our episodes, including transcripts, a bunch of the old ones actually just went up, medium.com/cointalk. Email us hi@cointalk.show. See you next week.